Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. Back to gardening on a what's going to be just a beautiful morning. I tell you, if you haven't got out yet, you're going to be surprised at what a pleasant temperature it is. It was in the 50s at my house in Bernie and 60s here in San Antonio. And hey, when we get along toward Mother's Day and we're getting this kind of cool morning, it is sure fine by me. Two lines open, two lines filled. We're going to talk to Sandy and Paula. You know the number if you want to get in, 210-599-5555. So let's start with the first caller. That would be Sandy. Good morning, Sandy.
Yes. I had talked to you about a month and a half ago about cutting down my iron plant to let them...
Yeah, cast iron, right.
Yes. Uh-huh. Is it sticking? I didn't do it. Is it too late to go ahead and do it?
Well, here's the thing, and you've made it a little bit harder for yourself because at this late date, you can't just go through with the lawnmower and mow everything off. What you're going to have to do is start at the edge and just go along and cut out the old leaves, but you're going to see your little new leaves are starting to come up and unroll, and it's just now going to be selectively going through and cutting out the old leaves. But if you go through and just whack it off all at one level, all those new ones coming out where you cut the top off of them, they're always going to have brown edges. So it's not too late to cut the big ones back, but you can't just go through and mow the whole bed down. You're just going to have to go through frond by frond, pruners in one hand and the other hand just kind of moving things back and forth so you can see what you're doing. But it's not too late to thin out the older leaves, let the new ones come out. But you can't just mow it off like we could have a month ago.
They're in a big planter, brick planter.
Yep.
I don't know if that makes a difference or not, but I didn't water them, you know, and with our dry spell and everything, they've pretty well browned.
Yeah, well, I would definitely water them, and then, like I say, you can go through and cut back all the leaves that look bad. But again, just don't go through and mow everything down, because I think when you start thinning out the older leaves, you're going to see some nice, strong, new green ones coming out from below. And that's the nice thing about aspidistra. When you cut them back, they're going to look bad for 3 or 4 weeks. But this time of year, all of a sudden, they're prettier than they have ever been. But I would definitely water them. I would definitely throw a little bit of organic fertilizer in that planter as well.
Okay, and can you use can you use Color Essentials inside, or is that too smelly?
It doesn't. No, it's not really bad smelling. Color Essentials is a Maestro Grow products, and it does not have any manures in it. It's based on, you know, feather meal and alfalfa and all sorts of good things. Mm-hmm. So it is not quite as fast acting as a liquid fertilizer, but it's perfectly fine to use inside and will have virtually no smell to it at all. If anything, it has sort of a, you know, a pleasant alfalfa-y smell, but because there are no manures, it does not have any disagreeable aromatic qualities, shall we say.
Okay. And can I use those on, I use that every 4 weeks. Is that correct on my flowering?
You know, every 4 to 8 weeks, every 4 weeks would be nice, but if it's every 6 or 8 weeks, it is a naturally slow release product. So, I kind of aim at maybe every 6 weeks. And, if you get it done a little more often, if you get it done a little less often, your plants are still going to do well.
Okay. And the last one is I've got some garlic chives and a chili patine bush. Can I use, the regular fertilizer on that?
Are these in pots or these in the ground? In the ground or in pots? Yeah, just use Yeah, you can use usually Growing Green or, you know, any of the good basics. Nature's Creation makes a good one called Premium Lawn Food that's actually good for lots of things. Maestro Grow makes their Texas Tea. Medina makes their Growing Green. All of those will be just fine on your chili piquins and all.
What do you, I always buy Color Essentials from you, then I buy an organic one also from you. It's in a plastic bag.
Yeah, we, and again, I don't brag about our own product lines, because when we find a product we just love, we go to the people that make it and say, how would you make it better? And then we have them do that for us. That's how Color Essentials came about, is we love Maestro Grow's Rose Glow product. And so we went to Gary DeMasters, that owned the company at the time, and said, how would you make it better, Gary? And he added a few other things to it, and we call it Color Essentials. We love Medina's Growing Green product, so we went to Stuart Frankie and said, Stuart, how would you make it better? And he said, oh, more green sand and more humates. And so we have one, and again, I don't talk about this all the time, because obviously only place you can get it is Shades of Green, and I'm out to promote everybody, not just us. But what we call Landscape Essentials is just Medina's Growing Green with extra green sand and extra humates. Didn't raise the price, and he just put some more good stuff in it. So if you were buying it from us, we carry the Growing Green, and then we carry the one they make for us that we call Landscape Essentials.
Okay. Well, the Color Essentials, I mean, I've never had a better fertilizer than that. I mean, it keeps my plants blooming, so I buy from you on that.
Well, we appreciate that. And that's the way we felt. You know, we thought Rose Glow was just absolutely outstanding, and then they took it and made it a little better still for us. So we're extremely pleased to just to have a good working relationship with companies like that, so that we can truly try to bring you the best of the best. But there are lots of good fertilizers out there, and it's kind of like, you know, you don't want, you'd rather eat prime rib than eat a hamburger, but a hamburger's not too bad if you're hungry. So any of them work real well, but we sure do like the Color Essentials.
Okay, any organic will be safe on my chives and chili piquin.
It'd be safe for the plants and safe for you. Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, thank you so much.
Always good to talk to you. You have a wonderful weekend and a happy Mother's Day, Sandy.
Thank you kindly.
Goodbye. For us, it's a very special day because we actually opened Shades of Green on Mother's Day. Oh, 39 years ago. I must have only been 10 years old at the time. But, yeah, very special day tomorrow. And let's talk to another lady. Let's talk to Paula. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have several questions. My first one is, last week I got in on the end of the story, but there is a new nutgrass killer, or there's one being formulated. Can you update me on that?
Well, it's not really new. We kill nutsedge with molasses. Nutsedge is basically a plant that loves super high moisture conditions, which results in anaerobic soil, which is not real good for a lot of things, but the nutsedge really likes kind of poor conditions to grow in. When we treat the area that it's growing with dry molasses, we bring in a lot of favorable microbial activity. We simply get things going to the point that the nutsedge doesn't tolerate it very well. It starts rotting. It's not like you put on your molasses one day and everything will be brown the next day, but we just do fairly concentrated molasses, maybe a quarter of a cup of molasses to a gallon of water. We drench the area where we have the nutsedge, and just a couple of weeks later, all of a sudden, you notice that it's just yellowing and going away. And we've been recommending that for some time. I don't know that there's a specific product out there. The only products that I know of are things like Image and Manage, which are both very toxic weed killers that I would never put in my landscape. But we do a pretty good job of lemon nutsedge with just molasses and water.
And you said what to a gallon of water?
It's, you know, and I don't usually measure. It's somewhere between a quarter of a cup and half a cup, probably somewhere between 4 to 8 ounces of it to a gallon of water. And, again, it's not really a foliar spray. I do it in a watering can and then just kind of pour it over the area. And, gosh, I've pretty much eliminated nutsedge. I very rarely even see nutsedge anymore, but the molasses and water really seems to take care of it.
Okay. My next question is, is it okay to use those mosquito donuts? And I have a fountain to keep
yes.
the mosquitoes from breeding. Is it okay for the birds to drink it?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's fine for the birds. Now, unless you have a huge fountain, you probably don't need to put the whole donut in there. They're called mosquito dunks. You can probably break that little donut into about four pieces, and that'll save you a lot of money because wouldn't hurt anything, but it'd just be kind of overkill. But no, it does not bother the birds. It does not bother anything that bathes or swims or drinks up from your fountain. It's a bacterial product. It's called BTI, Bacillus thuringiensis israeliensis, and it's harmless to birds and pets and people.
Okay. Several weeks ago, you mentioned a gentleman's name, Sam, that could do various things in your yard, but I didn't
yes.
get his phone.
Well, his business name is Green Grow, G-R-O-W, Green Grow Organics. His name is Sam Sitterly. His phone number is 275-8200. That's a 210 area code, of course, but 275-8200. And, he specializes in compost teas, fertilizer, natural control for everything from grub worms to thrips, and been doing it for about 30 years. So lots of experience and nothing toxic when Sam does it.
Okay. And that's my last question is, I'm pretty sure you carry ladybug products, and they have, I think it's Vortex.
Vortex potting soil. Yes, uh-huh.
You have that at the nursery?
We do carry that. We carry a couple of potting soils. There's Nature's Creation also makes a very good potting soil, and we carry that, and we carry the Vortex. We sure do.
Okay. Is there any? I used to, years ago, I used to use Bacto potting soil. I swore by Bacto, but I
right.
can't find it. I've looked on the internet and everything.
Yeah, Bacto was based on a black peat moss called Michigan peat, a pretty highly decomposed peat moss coming out of Michigan. The newer products, the Vortex and the Nature's Creation, are both a very superior product as far as the health of the plants, also in an environmental sense. Peat moss is just not a renewable resource, and I think they practically mined out. They were digging it up in Minnesota, and I think they basically practically ran out of it. So I think you'll find either the Vortex or the Nature's Creation potting soil to be a better product than the Bacto was.
Okay. I appreciate all your help, and I really enjoy your show.
Polly, you're most kind, and I wish you a happy Mother's Day, and we'll look forward to visiting again. Thank you so much. All right, let's get back to gardening. Phone lines filled up again. It's going to be Beverly and Billy and James and Elaine, and let's just start out with Beverly. Good morning, Beverly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 30 by 5 foot raised garden that we built back in 2003 and
okay.
put in organic soil, did really nice for a few years, and now it is full of little fine red roots.
Uh-huh.
That I can't hardly, when I put a digging fork in there, I can't hardly tear them out.
Well, unfortunately, what happens is you create a nice batch of soil, and whatever trees or shrubs, usually trees, are in the area, that's where they're going to want to send all their roots. And, I mean, we've had them early days of the nursery. We actually had a couple of old ash trees that came with the property. Thank God they're gone now. But they would actually grow roots up into the bottom. We had some big whiskey barrels full of blooming plants, and those blasted roots that actually come up out of the ground and up through the holes in the bottom of the whiskey barrels, and first thing you know, we could hardly get a little spade in to plant anything because there were so many roots. And unfortunately, there's not any real good solution except just just basically dig them out, because you've just, you know, that's the place where the nutrients are. That's the place where the water is. And it's probably gonna just be find somebody with a nice strong back that'll come help you and just go through, go around the edge, dig down with a sharp shovel and just cut the roots and then kind of get in there with your spading fork or whatever else, turn it over and pull the roots out as best you can. Or else you can just, you know, go on just digging holes through the roots and planting. Things are still going to grow just fine. But what you've got is just is a nearby tree that has suddenly found the best soil in, you know, the best soil in Beverly's whole yard. And so that's where it's putting all its roots.
Okay. So I was hoping there was some magic potion I could put in there.
I wish there was, but, you know, it's just Mother Nature at work. She wants the roots to go where they have the best life, so to speak. And Beverly's beautiful raised bed is just the best soil they can find. And so one root gets in there, it just starts multiplying and multiplying and multiplying. And sometimes when you do a really high bed, people will put this stuff they call root block on the bottom, but I find that over time it breaks down a little bit and the roots make their way into it anyway. And it's just about, it's about every 3 years. You just have to go through and kind of clean out the roots that are coming up in there and go back to planting what you want to grow instead of what Mother Nature wants to grow in there.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, it's
really enjoy your show.
You're most kind, and I enjoy talking to you. So you get out and have a wonderful day today, tomorrow, and every day, and I'll look forward to visiting again, Beverly. Thanks for the call. Goodbye. All right, let's talk to Billy. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, Dr. Webster. Can you educate me a little bit on drip irrigation?
I will happily do that. And there are basically two, I guess, some people would say three kinds of drip irrigation. The one that, you know, that a lot of the box stores and things push are soaker hoses. And I think those are one of the worst inventions in the world because, it's a good idea, but a soaker hose ends up putting out about 80% of its water in the first 20% of the hose. So it doesn't water evenly. So I'm not a fan of soaker hoses. The second type of drip irrigation is where you have, in effect, a water supply line, and then you punch little pieces of fine, we call it spaghetti tubing, down in there, and you put a little emitter down at the base of the plants, and it's just kind of like having a water line running along and a bunch of different hydrants coming off of it. And it is just basically usually about a 3/4 inch line. And then they put in these little side chutes that come out. The problem with those, and some people do okay with them, but in San Antonio and the Hill Country, and I guess really lots of South Texas, our problem is that they tend to plug up with calcium awfully quickly. And the only way that you know that your drip's not working is when the plants in one area start dying, and it's simply because the line got plugged up, and all of a sudden that portion of the drip system is not putting out the water that the plants need. So that brings us to the third type of drip irrigation, which is what I find works really very well, and they call it inline, kind of a long name, but they call it pressure compensated tubing. And what it's going to be, it's a half inch line. The best one I've found is made by Rainbird, and it's got this little built-in emitter every 12 inches. These little emitters, they have a little screen in there that keeps roots from getting into them. I have never had any problem with calcium buildup. I've had the inline drip, I guess, for about 5 years, is as long as I've been using it. But my original lines are still working just fine. It's not terribly expensive, somewhere like 60 or 70 cents a foot. But the real beauty of it is that with this little built-in emitter, and it's not just a hole in the tube, it's got a pretty complex little thing. I don't know how they can make it and still sell it so cheaply, but I've got one run of that in my garden that's probably 200 feet long, and I get exactly the same amount of water out of the end emitter as I do out of the first one in the line. So I find that it waters very evenly. At each one of those little emitters puts out 9/10 of a gallon per hour, so it's a slow, steady drip, and I use that in my vegetable garden. My business partner uses it in her flower beds where she's growing annuals and perennials and, you know, various permanent things. So those are the three common types of drip systems. And my favorite is the inline, what they call pressure compensated tubing by Rainbird. I think you'll find it available at most good nurseries. I think you'll probably also find it at lots of the box stores. If you want somebody to help install it, S.A. Rainmaker here in town. Bill's actually the guy that originally turned me on to this stuff, but I know they use it. They use it for grass. The city won't let you put sprinkler heads out in that little strip between the sidewalk and the curb, and so Bill actually uses it as an effective way of watering grass. I use it. He, of course, buries it. I tend to leave it up on the surface because I, you know, sometimes go in and tee off of it and add a little bit more here and there. But it's called Pressure Compensated Drip Tubing by Rainbird. And I guess the one other hint that I would tell you, the little L's and T's and things like that you use to create the system, what you do is take your piece of tubing, and I just carry, you know, my old Starbucks mug of hot water, stick that piece of tubing down in there for 15 seconds or so. The heat softens that tubing to where you can slide the emitters in real easily. If you just use the tubing cold, you really have to work to push in. It's they're sort of barbed looking, but to push the L's and T's in. But if you carry a little thing of hot water and then just stick the tubing down in there for a few seconds, boy, the little connectors just slide in. And be sure you have everything the right length, because it's virtually impossible to pull them out once you've slid them in there. But it's a job anybody can do. You want to lay out the area that you want to apply it, but it's very simple, very quick. And like I say, I've had it in place for several years with no problems. The one thing that I have found is that the little L's and T's, which are a rigid plastic rather than a flexible plastic, but over time, they do become brittle. So I try to put just a scoop of mulch or, you know, something over the top of them so they don't get so much sunlight. But if there's any negative to the system, that's what I found, that after 2 or 3 years, little connectors get brittle, but they're really easy to replace if one of them breaks. So that's the long and the short of it.
I appreciate that. I've done a little research, and I was debating about going that route or doing your number two option or whatever, and I was a little leery about that, and I remembered you'd talked about it. I'd heard you talk about it a little bit before. So on a 14-foot by 60-foot area, would I run, how far apart would I need to run? And this would be for a vegetable garden. How many runs should I make down through there?
Well, everywhere that I have a row of plants, whether it's tomato plants or pepper plants or okra, I will put, you know, two lengths of the tubing about 12 inches apart. I just, you know, love having water, you know, coming at it from both sides. And I wouldn't worry about trying to do, you know, just a regular grid throughout the thing. I would just kind of lay out where you're going to have your rows in that. That's a pretty nice size little area, 14 by 60. You grow a lot of stuff. But I would just do two little runs and connect it down at the end so it makes a continuous loop. But I just do two runs of the drip tubing for along each row. And you know, you can get as fancy or as simple as you want. Simplest thing is just to put the connector on the end where you can hook a garden hose to it and turn it on and off at the hydrant. Because I do occasionally go out of town for several days, whether it's to a gift market or occasionally to actually do a little fly fishing in the mountains, which sure sounds good right now. But I put, I put the electric solenoids on it just like a sprinkler system, and my system waters automatically even when I sneak out of town for a few days. So you can make it as simple or as complex as you want. Just depends on how much time you want to spend turning it on and off. But I guess I should mention there is one other thing they call T-tape, which is very inexpensive, that I know a lot of commercial growers use. But basically, it's designed to stay down for one season, and then you pull it up and replace it the next. I just don't like putting that much plastic into the environment and then ripping it up and disposing of it. So I still go with pressure-compensated drip. But in some situations, the T-tape is a real cheap and pretty efficient way of watering as well.
Okay. Do y'all sell it and all the fittings as well?
Yeah, we sure do.
Okay.
And I should mention that Rainbird also makes a blank line, which has no emitters in it. So if you're running, you know, if your rows are fairly far apart, you can always use a little short piece of that. Or if you want to run a line from the hydrant out to the garden, they make the solid brown plastic line that has no emitters in it, which is also very useful in some areas.
Well, what we've got, this is down at the ranch down around Crystal. We, when we bought it, there was an existing trailer house sitting on it, and they went and poured a concrete footing all the way around it so they could underpin it.
Sure.
And we moved the trailer and everything, and I thought, man, that would be an ideal place to do this. The only other deal, we've also got a pond right there which has a submersible pump in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do a little bit of our landscape watering out of. I would pick up a little algae from time to time. Would that be a problem?
Algae wouldn't be a problem, but if you're picking up much particulate matter, I put a little filter in there that you can clean periodically. And I probably should mention, you just brought up a real important point, Billy. A lot of people use this stuff to put around their foundations when we get dry, you know, having the soils, not so much down where you are, but where we have clay soils, that wet, dry cycle can really mess up a foundation, as a lot of people have learned to their expensive dismay. But a lot of people will just run a line of this all the way around the foundation to keep a even moisture level around the slab, and sure heads off a lot of foundation problems.
Excellent. Second question, diatomaceous earth for worming goats.
Uh-huh.
Will that work?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It works differently than it does in killing fire ants. It is an irritant to the intestine of a goat or a cow or a horse or whatever, and it's kind of an abrasive, and the goat or whatever animal, it forms like a mucus ball that just basically sweeps the intestinal parasites out. Now, it's not going to do anything against heartworms or liver flukes or things like that, but intestinal parasites, which are usually your roundworms, your ascarids, and a lot of others, the DE is very effective you know, as a safe natural wormer for all kinds of intestinal parasites.
Bob, I tell you, you are just a wealth of information. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, I started in my grandfather's greenhouse when I was 5 years old. My training is as a research biologist, so I've got a weird mind. It forgets all the things I want to remember, like people's names, but it remembers some of the things that I want to forget. But things related to plants and animals tend to stay there for a long time, so I'm very blessed to be in the business I'm in, I guess. Billy, you get out and have
really
wonderful weekend. Wish all the ladies in your life a very happy Mother's Day.
You got it. Thank you, sir.
And Elaine's up first. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing this beautiful morning?
I am very, very good. My question is about harlequin bugs on my kale plants.
Uh-huh.
How do I control that? Do I use the spinosad soap, or do I mix it with anything else? How do I use it most effectively, or what do I do?
Well, you're not going to like the answer. The answer is, it's time to pull up the kale and plant something else. We're right at the end of the season on kale, unfortunately. Now, if you want to spray them, the spinosad soap will take care of them, but you're going to find for every 100 that you kill, 150 new ones show up. And, you know, that's the good and the bad of harlequin bugs is they don't come around when the plants are healthy and growing vigorously in the cool weather. The bad news is that once the plants start getting stressed from the hot weather, their armies of harlequin bugs show up and go after them. So you can use the old thumb and forefinger method. If you're wearing gloves, you can spray them with spinosad soap, which will limit them. Now, is this edible kale or is this more ornamental kale?
No, it's edible.
Yeah, it's the flavor of your kale is going to really start diminishing now that the weather's getting hotter. So much as I love the Toscano kale, next day off is going to be the end of my kale, and I've pretty much stopped harvesting it because it just doesn't have the flavor that it did early in the season. So you can spray if you want to, but I just pull it out and plant some okra or some more peppers or some more squash or something like that.
And what about squash bugs? How do you control those things?
The spinosad soap will take care of them. What I have always found on the squash bugs is that if you get after them early in the season, when you first see those big old gray bugs show up, and again, I'm afraid I usually just use the old thumb and forefinger method, but if you'll keep them picked off for the first month, before they have a chance to lay the eggs, I very rarely have a problem later in the summer. Now, the spinosad soap works against them, and it works very quickly against the little newly hatched ones that are usually kind of white to gray in color. But I find that if I walk through the garden with a hose and wet down, all the adult bugs come running up right on the top of the leaves, and they're pretty easy to eliminate that way. But if you can control, say, the first 30 or 40 mature ones that show up. And I'm sure you know what the, do you know what the egg clusters look like? They'll be on the back of the leaves, and they're just a whole, you know, mass of little kind of reddish brown eggs that are the size of a grain of salt. And there'll always be a big cluster of them. Usually, I want to say somewhere between 10 and 35 eggs in a cluster. If they get ahead of me and I actually find one of the little egg clusters, I just take my thumbnail and kind of excise out that little portion of the leaf, put it in some soapy water, which eliminates it. But I feel like with the squash bugs, staying ahead of them is the most important thing. The ones that you miss, the spinosad soap will take care of.
Okay. So back to those harlequin bugs, there's not really any effective way to control them once they start coming out.
Well, yes, you can. The spinosad soap will work, but it's just to what purpose? Because your kale is just not going to taste real good now that the weather's gotten hotter, and the bugs are just going to keep on coming back over and over because they sense that the plant is stressed, and that's when they want to move in and feed on the plant. So if you could arrange to have California weather throughout the spring, and then they're rarely a problem there, but just as soon as we start getting those warm days, your kale starts getting stressed. As soon as the kale starts getting stressed, the harlequin bugs move in.
Okay, so it's goodbye to my kale plants. Cause I do
it's goodbye to your kale. The good news is that blink twice and it'll be October, and it'll be time to plant some more.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you so very much. I appreciate the information.
Well, you're certainly welcome. It's good to talk to you, and a very happy Mother's Day to you. Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you.
Certainly. Goodbye. All right. Listen, I tell you what, let me get my last break of the hour in here because I don't want to be pushing right up against news. Just a moment. We'll talk to Mike and Tom and Janine. But I get to talk to you for a moment about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems and you know how I feel about them, because that's the roof I have on my home. That's the roof we have on Shades of Green. That's the roof my business partner and her husband have on their home. Simply the best roof in the industry, in my opinion. Our roofs have stood up to hail, to high wind, to all those things that tear up other roofs. And our Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roofs just keep on looking beautiful. And, you know, it's just peace of mind. It's truly the last roof you'll ever put on your home. They give you the best warranty in the industry. It's real simple. They never have to come out and do anything. I just chuckle when I hear all these other roofing companies advertise how quick they are to get out and do repairs and temporary patches. You just never have to do that with a Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roof because they do the job right the first time. And if you don't like the look of a shiny standing seam metal roof, well, you have your choice of lots of colors. If you don't like the look of standing seam metal, you've got roofs that look like ceramic tile or slate or shake shingles, all out of that same lifetime quality material. The workmanship is just unsurpassable. If you simply want the best roof, a trouble-free roof, a roof that'll save you money on your energy bills and on your insurance, a roof that you never have to worry about, you just give my friends over at Southwest Metal Roofing Systems a call. 210-822-6868. That's 210-822-6868 for Southwest Metal Roofing Systems.
Restore the natural balance in your fields or lawn with Viatrac fertilizer. Viatrac is totally organic, naturally composted broiler litter that contains over 2,700 strains of active living bacteria and fungus that your soil needs to live. Viatrac is pelletized, making it easily spreadable, clump-free, and without obnoxious odors. Use it on your landscaping, plants, trees, pastures, hay fields, and more. Viatrac is available by the bulk truckload, one-ton super sack or 40-pound bags, perfect for your ranch, lawn, or garden needs.
To find out more about Viatrac Fertilizer, log on to ViatracFertilizer.com or visit Lubianski Grain and Feed Store at 13640 FM 1346 in St. Hedwig or call 210-667-1032 or 210-667-9705. Lubianski Feed and Grain Stores offers Viatrac by the bulk load or 40-pound bags for your ranch, lawn, and garden needs. Viatrac Fertilizer, feed the soil, feed the world.
The impact of COVID-19 continues to affect every company in unprecedented ways. But now there's a plan to help you and your business get back on your feet. Hi, I'm Jason Bailey, president and founder of Sun Broadcast Group, a national radio syndicator who works with this local station.
And I'm Jeff James, founder of Vista 14 and 20-plus year marketing veteran. Together, we're committing up to $200,000 to support fellow entrepreneurs and business owners just like you with the Brandon Possible Marketing Makeover.
Visit BrandonPossible.com to be entered to win a $50,000 comprehensive marketing makeover by our award-winning design and interactive marketing teams. Brand identity, marketing and collateral design, public relations, social media support, and much more.
Visit BrandonPossible.com and complete a quick survey for your chance to win.
Getting back to business can seem overwhelming at such a fragile time. But when the time does come to open those doors again, we'll be right there by your side to help you through.
Here are some of the fantastic reasons people put in an artificial lawn from Artificial Turf Kings. It looks great all year. No more mowing, weeding, or lawn care. No more watering. It's pet and kid friendly. You save time and money. Here are a few more fantastic reasons to contact Artificial Turf Kings. Get a free estimate. Save 40% off installation. Get 0% financing for 12 months. And get a 60-year warranty. A green lawn and no maintenance? Yes! Get your free estimate. Contact Artificial Turf Kings at turfkingsoftexas.com.
Do you need help making ends meet during the COVID-19 crisis? The City of San Antonio's new Emergency Housing Assistance Program provides assistance to pay for rent, mortgage, utilities, and internet access. As part of the assistance package, cash is available to pay for groceries, medicine, and fuel. To see if you qualify, visit www.sanantonio.gov/emergency-housing-assistance or call 311.
The feelings of anxiousness, sadness, discomfort, and the inability to get a good night's sleep. None of these are unusual, but during these troubled times, they seem to be intensified. This is Jorge, the CBD pharmacist at CBD Apothecary. I've kept busy working with regular clients and a lot of new clients right now, and I have some very good news. First, CBD Apothecary can help. As a pharmacist, I can offer professional advice on expectations, dosage, interactions with other medications, and benefits. And we're now online so you can order from the comfort of your home. You'll find us at mycbd-rx.com. That's mycbd-rx.com. With over 30 years' experience as a pharmacist, I look forward to working with you to address any issues you may be experiencing. What we pride ourselves on here is our commitment to service and to your satisfaction. Discover for yourself the possibilities of CBD products at CBD Apothecary. 210-957-0605, 957-0605, on the corner of Wurzbach and Babcock, behind McDonald's, and online at mycbd-rx.com.
If you live west of San Antonio, near Castroville, Lytle, Von Army, Divine, Hondo, or even Lackland Air Force Base, you now have a landscape and nursery business of your very own. It's Landscape Solutions and Nursery on Highway 90, 4 miles east of Castroville. Tell them what you're growing. They'll choose the very best soil. Not just any soil, it's customized, purely organic soil mix that consists of fully pasteurized aged manure and vegetable matter compost, several organic supplements such as bat guano, cotton seed meal, green and red sands, sphagnum, peat moss, and more, but never biosolids. When the soil is this good, your plants, flowers, vegetables, and lawn are fantastic. Visit Landscape Solutions and Nursery, 3059 U.S. Highway 90 East, or online at soilforsale.com. That's soil, the number 4, sale.com. Landscape Solutions and Nursery, open Monday through Saturday. Call 830-985-3747 for competitive prices and the best in soil mixes. Landscape Solutions and Nursery, 830-985-3747.
When it comes to hiring a roofer, don't mess around. Call my friends at Stevens Roofing. These guys cover all of South Texas, and I trust them to give you an affordable solution for all your roofing needs. Stevens Roofing, 210-785-0994.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening, and we're going to talk to Mike. Mike, if we get short on time, we'll put you back on hold and come back after the news, but good morning.
Hi, Bob. This is a quick question. I've got a tomato plant that is now about 5 foot tall, straight up, making a few blooms, no tomatoes. How do I stop the height growth?
Next time you look for a variety that is called a determinate tomato, what you have is an indeterminate that basically wants to grow as a giant vine. Now, the good news is the indeterminates tend to produce more tomatoes over a longer period of time. If you want to whack the top off of it, you can, and it will branch out, but it's just that plant's nature to want to make a long, tall vine. And next time, if you don't want to have to deal with it, you get what's called simply determinate, and they grow up to about 4 or 5 feet and stop growing. But as soon as the nights warm up, you're going to start getting a lot of fruit set, and you're going to be glad the plant's pretty big. So it's just doing its normal thing.
Oh, okay. Thank you much, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you're certainly welcome. Short and sweet. Thank you, Tom. All right. Well, right after news, we will be talking to, that was Mike, who will be talking to Tom and Janine. And you, a couple of lines open, grab one if you like. And just all you ladies out there, even if I don't say it every time, remember that we wish you the very happiest of Mother's Days.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
But don't dial right this second, because Tom and Janine and Carolyn and Sharon all get in ahead of you. But we'll have a line available for you pretty shortly on this beautiful morning, the day before Mother's Day. Oh, golly, it's just, it is a wonderful temperature. Take that cup of tea, cup of coffee, whatever, outside on the porch and enjoy, because, first thing you know, we're going to be into summertime's heat. This is just a beautiful weekend out there. Let's get back to the phone lines, and Tom is up next. Good morning, Tom.
Three quick questions. The first one is the bark beetle. When and what do you use to, you said you used the orange oil on the trunk of the tree or something.
Now, are we talking about the borer that gets on under the bark, or are we talking about the little creatures that are on the outside of the bark?
They're the large black borer that at this time of year they're walking up on the exterior of the tree.
Well, on the exterior of the tree, the best thing to use is spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. Totally safe for people and pets, but it's the best beetle killer I've found.
And when in the year, or do you constantly put it on there once a month?
You know, we don't usually see them year-round. There's usually a relatively brief period in the spring, and it's one of those things. I tend to be reactive on that rather than proactive. I don't usually spray unless I see them, unless I see a problem. So for me, it's spraying once or twice in, you know, March, April, May, sometime in there. And then I don't usually see them after that. If I do, the spinosad is still the thing I'm going to go to, but, I certainly don't feel like you should be out there spraying it every month or so. I just don't think it's necessary.
Okay. Thank you. And the other two quick questions. When do you plant the corn for the sweet corn for the fall? And the other question is the real, you mentioned a tomato, an indeterminate tomato called Real Talk 310. Is that a red, and is that the correct name?
That wasn't me that mentioned that. That was probably the extension agent. I don't know that particular one.
You had named three that you liked in your garden, and one was Juliet and the Sweet 100s, and there was a third one.
Okay, on the three cherries, my favorite three cherries are Sweet 100, Juliet, and Sun Gold. Sun Gold's a little yellow cherry that is so sweet. That is probably my number one favorite tomato. I go in when I walk in the garden, I go and eat about 20 of those is the first thing I do, and then I go on with my gardening. Now, big fruited tomatoes, if you like a big yellow, I like either Lemon Boy or Carolina Gold. If you like a purplish tomato, I'd have to say Cherokee Purple and Black Creme are my two favorites there. For a red tomato, that has really good flavor, I like Celebrity as a good one. I like one called Arkansas Traveler because it tends to produce a little bit later into the summer. Now, a lot of people, there's several others that are heavy producers, but I'm into flavor when it comes to tomatoes. I want a good tomato flavor, and those are some of the best. Probably the most flavorful tomato out there is called Brandywine, but it just is not a heavy producer, so I don't plant many of them. I plant a lot of Celebrities, plant a lot of Arkansas Traveler, and I'll sometimes plant some improved Porter. I'm always trying something different because I've always got, you know, 20 to 30 cages of tomatoes because everybody loves tomatoes.
Yes, there's a lot of them out there.
There are, but I tend to go with indeterminates. Now, the Celebrity is a semi-determinate, but it still produces a lot of tomatoes. But I'm into flavor, and I just generally don't go with so many of the ones. The Extension Service comes out with a rodeo tomato every year, and I find about one out of four is a tomato that I really like. So I just keep up with my old favorites and try a new one here and there.
And on the corn for fall?
You know, I have never been successful in growing corn in the fall in South Texas, and it's largely because there's an insect called a midge that just is, it's just hard to overcome. If you want to try it, most of your corns are about 55-day corns, which means you'll be planting sometime around the end of August to the 1st of September, but I have yet to get a corn crop in the fall that compares anything like the spring corn crop. So if you've got room in the garden, you want to give it a try, try to get it in just a little before Labor Day. And if all things go well, then you'll get some good sweet corn. But believe me, if it were easy to do, everybody would be doing it. It's just tough to grow good corn in the heat in here in South Texas at that time of year.
Well, thank you for all the information. I love the show.
I sure appreciate it, Tom. You have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk again. And moving along, Janine is up next, and it'll be Carolyn and Sharon. Good morning, Janine.
Good morning. I'm fighting this oxalis. I think it's the kind of green clover shape, but it gets a pink bloom, and the bloom is beautiful. But there are a million of them forever plant, I think.
Well, is it in your grass? Is it in your flower beds? Where do you have the oxalis? Yeah. a heavy mulch will really slow it down. It actually grows from a little corm. It's kind of like a little bulb. So it's hard to ever totally eliminate, but it doesn't really create any problems. It doesn't interfere that much with the other things. But where you're just having too much of it, I put an inch or two of mulch on top of it, and that's going to control 90-95% of it.
It has those stringy things in the bottom, you know,
yeah,
if you call it a bulb. And it's just, no, it comes ever between every rock or everything that I have, or in the succulents, in the cactus gardens, just everywhere is solid with it.
Well, yeah, if you're very selective in how you spray, the vinegar and orange oil will kill it, and it works very, very quickly. When I'm fighting oxalis or dandelions or any other weed in among plants, I carry just a piece of cardboard that's maybe a foot wide and 2 feet long, and I will hold that piece of cardboard up against the plant that I want to protect, and then I'll spray the weeds with my vinegar and orange oil mix. The vinegar orange oil does not spread through the soil. It does not get absorbed through the roots. It's only absorbed through the top. So I'll pick a calm day, and then I can walk around, and I mean, I can spray right up against the plant that I don't want to harm, and yet I can kill out the oxalis just by putting my little piece of cardboard up and spraying in front.
And what are your proportions on the vinegar and oil?
I use a gallon of strong vinegar and then 2 ounces of orange oil. Now, if you only want to make up a quart or so of it, because you don't soak the soil, you just soak the foliage, that's the equivalent of about 2 teaspoons of orange oil to a quart of vinegar. Because once you mix it up, you need to use it. It doesn't store well. So if you don't need to mix up a whole gallon, just mix up a quart and put about 2 teaspoons of orange oil in there, and it should work very well for you.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you. All right, next up is Carolyn. Let's go ahead and talk to Carolyn. Good morning, Carolyn.
Oh, good. I'll make this real fast. I want to plant some Brussels sprouts this year. I've never done that.
Okay.
I've got some seeds, and I want to know when to plant the seeds and just the general 101 on Brussels sprouts.
Okay, well, the thing that's complicated about Brussels sprouts is that they take a long time to produce. You know, we plant broccoli, and we're harvesting broccoli about 45 days later. Brussels sprouts take over 100 days to produce. So, and you normally don't directly plant the seed in the garden. Brussels sprouts is always much better to set out as a little plant that is already 2-4 inches tall. So you want to start your Brussels sprout seed toward the end of July, because it takes about a month to make a good transplant. And then we set out the plants. Hopefully we'll have good plants ready to go in the garden in early September. And when we do that, we're normally harvesting Brussels sprouts by about February or so. But you can plant them as late as probably the end of September. But when you plant too late, then you're kind of pushing the productive season later into the spring, and once it warms up, your Brussels sprouts stop making those tight little heads. They start making, you know, more open, and they're just not quite as good. So Brussels sprouts are, I guess you might say, they're a gamble in our warm climate. Now, you go a little further north, you go over to New Mexico or somewhere like that where they've got colder weather later in the winter, they grow the most beautiful Brussels sprouts in the world. But here in San Antonio, in all honesty, you're probably going to get good Brussels sprouts about every other year or about every third year. But if you're planting from seed, start the seed in July, set your plants out toward the end of August or early September, and if the weather cooperates, you'll get to enjoy harvesting Brussels sprouts early next spring.
Okay, that sounds good. I knew it took a long time to, you know, before you could harvest them, but I wasn't sure when to plant the seeds. And, okay, thank you very much. Did you have a certain variety you like, or just does it matter?
Oh, golly. Jade Cross is the variety that's been around for a lot of years, J-A-D-E-C-R-O-S-S. But I've not really ever found one that I would say is superior. That's the one I've grown before, and I know it's still a good one, but there may be some other varieties out there. Ask neighbors, okay. Ask friends. If they've had one that they've been very successful with, go with their recommendations.
Okay. Thank you for your information.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Carolyn. Thank you for calling this morning, and once again, a very happy Mother's Day to you. Thank you. All right, back to gardening. It's going to be Sharon and Mike and John and Steve. And we start out with Sharon. Good morning, Sharon.
Morning, how you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Okay, I have a question, and I kind of think I have the answer already. I have some pepper plants that are in pots. They were growing outside in the garden. They're now inside on the apartment balcony, but I've noticed that they're covered with tiny little white spots all over them.
Are these spots that move? Are they insects, or are they just little, spots of something growing on the plant?
It looks like just spots that are growing on the plants. I haven't seen them move.
Okay. It could be just a little bit of mildew, which is fairly common. Bright sunshine should take care of it. Peppers just across the board need the hottest, brightest sun you can manage. So put them on the sunniest place you can on that porch or on that balcony. If you need to raise them up on something so they are not, being shielded by a rail or something like that, you've just got to get those peppers where they get lots of hours of direct sunlight if they're going to grow well and produce well for you. Occasionally, we see some little insects that are white, things like whitefly. If those show up, the insecticidal soap or the spinosad soap seems to take care of them. But your biggest challenge with peppers is going to be getting enough sunlight to them.
Okay, and these are hot peppers. They're all different varieties of hot chili peppers.
Oh, there's so many good ones out there. We all grow a few serranos, a few jalapenos, but man, right. There are so many new hot ones out there, and I frankly don't see how people are able to consume some of them, but they make, you can make a great spray for repelling squirrels and all sorts of other things, but there are people that could just sit there and slice them up. You can actually get addicted to the capsaicin, to the heat in there, so you enjoy your hot peppers, but thank you. I think I'll stay with slightly milder ones myself.
Okay, so you think this probably just,
I think it's probably just a little bit of powdery mildew. We're seeing some of the same on squash and a few
like
other things.
It doesn't look like powdery mildew on it, though.
It might just... Yeah, it may just be a little tiny area where you had drops of water on the leaf and then the sun hits it and you get a little bit of it's like a magnifying glass. You get a tiny little bit of burn underneath. I don't think it's an issue. Now, everybody's peppers, the new growth looks a little crinkled, looks a little abnormal, and that's just because of cold nights. At this point, I'd be watering. I'd be fertilizing every couple of weeks with a good liquid organic fertilizer, and your peppers will grow out of it, but especially the higher heat varieties, they just can't wait for July to get here. The hotter and sunnier it is, the happier they are.
Okay, great.
But I don't think this is a problem you really need to do anything about, but just work at finding the sunniest place you can to grow those guys.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Sharon. Thank you. All right, Mike is up next. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing, sir?
I'm well. How about yourself today?
Excuse me. Doing great, Bob. Well, I tell you, it doesn't get much better in this weather-wise, does it? We haven't been...
We need
quite as many as we've got dealt, last year at this point, but we still got, some springtime to go. So, boy, it's just gorgeous.
Well, the weather's gorgeous. I desperately need some rain, and I imagine you do too. But we just look at the clouds and hope, and it will happen one of these days, typically in South Texas. We always say we alternate between ongoing drought and occasional floods, but I'm ready for that occasional flood. So are my cows and all my pastures. But we just take it like it is, and in the meantime, like you say, we're going to enjoy these gorgeous mornings.
Yes, sir. Well, as of this morning, we're a day closer to the next one. So
that's right.
Anyway, Bob, me being a seed grower, I'm a little disappointed because what I thought was Lemon Boys, is, you know, have turned out to be a cherry of some sort. But you know, I've got four hungry, you know, granddaughters that just. They just love the cherries, and I don't grow a lot of cherries anyway. But,
well, and they produce better in the summer. They produce better in the summer anyway. So, yeah, you can plant some Lemon Boys in the fall. Yep.
Well, you know, I didn't fail on my black crimps. I didn't do any Cherokee Purple this year, but I got plenty of black crimps set. So
good.
You know, we'll be all right.
Yes, sir.
What I got, Bob. Now. I noticed this last year. I've got raised beds, okay, in my back bed there. Last week, I guess it was week before, I noticed a perfect nickel-sized round hole next to one of my pepper plants. And you know, I've kind of seen it before. Well, then yesterday or last night, or night before last, I guess it was, I saw beside the bed, you know, outside the bed, 4 feet away, another hole that did look like it had, you know, some little clumps of dirt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the same thing last year in the front bed. Now, I've got a young garter snake that sits up there on top and suns, you know, just about every mm-hmm. morning on top of my 2x6s there. And now I hope his whole family's there. But what do you think I could be looking at there, Bob?
Well, I think it's something coming out of the ground rather than something going down into the ground. This is a time of year that a lot of different... Well, yeah, rhinoceros beetles, one possibility. It's a little early for cicadas. When we get to June and into July, you're going to have cicadas, and you know, they make a hole that may be 3/4 of an inch in diameter. But in any event, it's not anything to worry about. Your garter snake, they don't dig, they will certainly take advantage of a burrow like that. And you never can tell. I can't tell you how many times.
Families there, yeah, yeah,
yeah, and toads too. More than once, I found a hole in the garden. I put the hose on it to flood it, and boy, here comes this little toad face out. Like, hey, you just. I don't have flood insurance. You just flooded me out. But I think you're.
A few on that one, Bob. I used to do a lot of. You know, flowers and pots, and
uh-huh.
and they would get up in there and burrow down in the dirt and go to water. I'm not afraid of anything, Bob, except a brown recluse or black widow that I can't see.
Scorpions hiding down in there. But what you're
going to kill you or hurt you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a temporary pain, but I wouldn't worry about it. I just it's just one of those little interesting phenomena that show up this time of year, and you just wish that there was a way that you could have a camera out there and just see what comes out, because nature just does so many amazing things. But my guess is rhinoceros beetle or one of the other big beetles coming out.
Okay, I was kind of thinking mice. But, you know, I see, of course, you know, my eyes are what they used to be. I see no evidence that was, you know, and there's plenty of old feral cats around here. So.
Oh, yeah. And mice don't really dig much. Mice burrow. They want to get under a log. They want to get, you know, under a box somewhere. And they'll sometimes get underneath a rock, but they don't dig a perceptible hole. So I'm pretty sure it's an insect of one sort or another and probably not anything damaging.
Yeah. Okay, Bob. And getting back to the toads, you know, I get out in the water, you know, daybreak. First thing, that's the first thing I do when I wake up. you know, not so much this year. I hadn't got my zinnias put out front, you know, and a lot of stuff yet.
Mm-hmm.
They're ready to go. I just been lazy. But yeah, I put, you know, put that watering can down in them pots, you know, many a time them big old toads jump out. And take you a little bit by surprise, but they're all welcome. So
yes, sir.
The more lizards and toads and snakes I've got, the happier I am. So
well, the fewer bugs you've got. Yep.
The holes are about nickel size, so that's it. And you know, I see a lot of the big old grubs, you know, in my compost in my bed. So okay, yeah, that I kind of figured it was probably an insect, but you don't think it could be mice, right?
No, sir. Okay. And if you see a mouse, it might want to use that for a burrow, but that's not typically mouse. Mouse is more going to, you know, make a nest. It's not going to dig a hole. So, no, there may be other things that use that just as a place to, somebody did the work of digging it out, but that's more likely going to be, you know, your little lizards, your annoles, and, maybe that garter snake, but nothing to worry about. And, you know, I guess if you want to see if anybody's in there, just, you know, turn the hose on, flood it, and if anybody's living in there, you'll see them.
I've actually done that 5 or 6 times there, and the only thing I can figure, he's got another out, you know, or some other chambers, whatever it may be.
That beetle just comes out and he's gone. He's never going to go back in once he's come out of the ground. So it's just a little hole in the surface to help the water and oxygen get deeper into the soil. So observe and enjoy.
Yeah, the one I've mulched on my beds a couple of weeks ago, but outside of the one that I saw inside the bed, the one that's outside of the bed, you know, I fill it with water and then he comes back sometime at night and digs it out again, whatever it is. So anyway, as long as mice were my concern, and even at that, it's not, you know, it's not going to hurt.
I don't think you're looking at a mouse. And if that garter snake's big enough, they're more bug eaters, but they'll take a mouse if they can manage. So, Mike, you get out and have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy this day, and I know we'll talk again soon.
All right,
thank you, sir.
Pups of Pat. Thanks.
I'll sure do it. Thank you. All right, we are back to gardening and back to the phone lines, and at least one open line. Give me a call, 210-599-5555. My next two callers are going to be John and Steve, and John is up first. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Dr. Bob. I'm calling because I've been working hard since Wednesday at sodding my lawn with St. Augustine.
Florida. Very good. Yes, sir.
And I just need your direction how to best get this going. It looks a little dull now. And
okay.
So I want to know what I need to do to get it going and to get it greener.
All right, sir. Well, you know, it's going to take a little time for it to put, you know, its roots down. So we're looking at 4 to 6 weeks to get really well established. But you've got all your grass planted now, don't you? You don't have any of it still stacked on the pallets.
I have it just a little bit. I've just about got it all done, Bob.
Well, get it all done. If you don't have time to plant it, spread it out one layer thick, because it really goes downhill in a hurry. It just really shouldn't stay stacked on the pallets at all. So even if you don't have time to plant it, get it spread out on the driveway, on the sidewalk. It just can't stay stacked up. First and most important thing you do is to roll it. You can go to any of the rental centers, and I don't know, probably 10, 12 bucks. You can rent one of these water-fillable rollers. It's kind of like a rolling pin with a handle. You fill it up with water, weighs about 300 pounds. You just go back and forth over the top of your sod. And what you're doing, you're not trying to level, but you're pressing the air pockets out between the sod and the soil underneath. You've got to get those air pockets out, or you'll end up with a little dead spot here, a little dead spot there, little areas that are maybe a foot square where the St. Augustine just folds up and dies. And it's simply because the new sod didn't get pressed tightly against the soil underneath it. So rolling it is a very important thing to do. You can put an organic fertilizer on any time. Organic fertilizers don't burn. I sometimes will put the fertilizer down before I plant the grass, but you can also put it put it down right afterwards. You're going to need to water regularly, probably daily, maybe even twice a day for the first week or so, because you want to keep that area moist where the roots are trying to grow into the soil underneath. After a week or so, you can cut back to like every other day. After about 6 weeks, you can treat it like a mature yard and go to watering it once a week. But Florida Tampa's good St. Augustine for sunny areas, and it's just one of the toughest forms of St. Augustine. It's the most drought tolerant, it's the most sun tolerant shade St. Augustine out there. But roll it, fertilize it, water it. About 6 weeks from now, you should have a beautiful yard.
Well, it's good to know, Bob. If you don't think it's been sitting on a pallet too long? You know, I mean, I've been working hard at this. You know,
yeah. Yeah, oh man. That's when you get a case of beer and call every friend you've got. And, you know, it's the faster you get it out, the better. If you got this on Wednesday, I think you're probably just fine with it. If you got it, you know, back last Sunday and you didn't get around to getting started on it till Wednesday, it's been set back a bit. But, so, is it still basically green to gray-green in color? How much yellowing do you have in it?
Some yellow, yes.
Okay. You might want to, in the areas that are yellowed, you might want to get a little bit of whole ground cornmeal and dust around, because you may have some fungus started in there. And the whole ground cornmeal is cheap. You just go to a feed store, nursery, somewhere like that, and get a bag and just broadcast it by hand. I mean, you can use a spreader, but I would just concentrate on just a light sprinkling over the areas that are yellow. That'll get your trichoderma fungus going, which will again, take out any bad fungi that are in there. But we really want to just, you know, get it tightly against the ground and give it the water and nutrients it needs to start growing, because St. Augustine grows in a hurry this time of year. And again, the way it looks now, the way it's going to look 6 weeks from now, are just night and day difference.
Okay, that's good, Bob. Appreciate it. Anything else come to mind?
You certainly, I don't think you need to worry about grubworms at this point, or certainly not about chinch bugs or anything. At this point, just, again, get some fertilizer down, work at keeping it watered. And when you go out probably give it a week, and then go out and just gently grab some of the grass like you were grabbing somebody by the hair, lift up. I think you'll probably find that it's getting well rooted into the soil, and then you're just well on your way.
Yeah, fertilizer fine. It's the best, that organic. You know,
any of the organics, you know, Medina, Nature's Creation, Texas Tea by Maestro Grow, any of those are great fertilizers. Stay away from the synthetic stuff. That'll burn, and long term, it's not real good. But whether it's you know, Medina is one of the easiest to find. Nature's Creation is also a real good one that doesn't have, Medina's going to have a little odor issue with it because it's a poultry litter that goes away in a hurry. Nature's Creation's product is based on alfalfa, which doesn't have any of the odor. The Texas Tea is based on a whole bunch of different meals in there. So you buy what you find at a reasonable price. They're all going to be real good for your St. Augustine.
Thank you so much, Bob. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, John. Thank you. And next up will be Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Morning, sir. Yes, sir. Just fine.
Great. I've got a couple key lime trees I just put in the ground 2 weeks ago. How long does it take those things to get going? They're like in suspended animation. They're not doing anything. It's been two solid weeks.
It's probably going to be two solid months or more because It just takes a while for them to get their roots spread out. And at this point, they're going to spend more time growing roots than they are growing tops. Now, key lime is a great plant. You're going to have to protect it. It's the least cold hardy of all of our citrus. But key lime, unlike the Persian limes, they can bloom anytime. They can produce limes anytime. Best limes in the world for anything from margaritas to limeade. But 2 weeks, as long as they're looking good, as long as you're not dropping a whole bunch of leaves. You're always going to have a few leaves turn yellow and drop. But at this point, you're going to have to be patient with it because it's going to take several more weeks before you're really going to see a lot. I would be fertilizing about every 2 weeks with a good liquid organic fertilizer. And just remember, they're going to spend more time growing roots for a little while before they really start putting on their top growth. But that's totally normal.
Okay, thanks. And the leaves are real curly, and they're not dropping, but they've got a silvery color to them, and they're a little curly, and they were that way when I bought it.
That's from all the wind. That's kind of what citrus does this time of year. The new leaves that come out will be much brighter green. They'll start out real soft, and then they toughen up fairly quickly. But every citrus out there has got curly leaves on it with the kind of weather we've been having, and that's not really anything to be concerned about, Steve. Do be fertilizing regularly. Do be watering. Now, did you put these in the ground, or are they in big containers?
Ground.
Okay, feel the soil right at the base of the tree. Water thoroughly whenever it's dry, about a knuckle deep. How often that is will depend on the temperature, the wind, the humidity. So I can't tell you every second day, every third day, but your index finger is the best moisture meter in the world. When you water, water really thoroughly, let them dry to the proper point, and then water thoroughly again, and be a little patient with them. They will definitely reward you in the long run.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, back to gardening. We'll try to get Marilyn and Chris and Larry in here before our Howard Garrett break. Good morning, Marilyn.
Yeah, good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I am chopping down a 25-year-old Bradford pear in my backyard. And
okay.
I noticed, boy, that west sun really does come in now. And I'm trying to think of something to replace it to kind of block the west sun. I'm thinking about like a Mexican sycamore, a lacy oak, a cedar elm, something that would be more upright and not spread out real far.
How big a tree do you want this to grow into? Do you want something 20 feet, 30 feet?
West sun, because there's nothing stopping it.
Okay.
I'm thinking that's why I'm going with some of the smaller trees and something that doesn't, you know, branch out or spread out real far.
Well, Mexican sycamore is by far the fastest growing. Now, but it's going to get big and it's going to spread out to some extent. If you're looking for something that's going to stay, you know, not too broad and going to grow about 30 feet tall, you can get a big crepe myrtle. You can get something like Basham's Party Pink crepe myrtle. It'll grow.
I don't like crepe myrtles. I want the lacy oak, even a big tooth maple, but that probably is not going to shade very much.
Well, they're just slow. Lacy's oak is wonderful, but it's slow. Big tooth maples are wonderful, but they're slow. And I have an idea. You want this thick yesterday, so probably, yeah, you probably want Mexican sycamore is what you're looking for.
Okay. And so it'll take the west sun.
Oh yeah. And it will make a big tree, and it'll grow faster than any other reasonable quality tree I can think of. You know, if you were just moving into this house and you wanted to invest 10 years in it, we could look at Lacey's oak. We could look at Mexican live oak. But you want to be rid of that sun in the near future, so I think Mexican sycamore is probably going to be the best choice for you.
Okay, I think I'll go ahead and do that. And also, I just wondered, how close can you plant a big tooth maple to your house as far as the roots? And, you know, they grow pretty much straight up, so...
Yep. I would stay at least 5 feet out. 10 feet out would be better, but it's not going to bother your foundation. I don't want to grow it up into the soffit, into the eaves. So 5 to 10 feet out is fine.
5 to 10 feet, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's about what they're planted now. So anyway, okay, well, thank you. I appreciate your help.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you. Okay, on to Chris. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Bob, and everybody else out there. Three quick things and then a question. Number one, if you get harlequin beetles, do like I do. Pull up your plants, feed them to your chickens. They love them.
That's the thing to do.
Number two, the guy with the lime trees where they're sitting there. My Mexican limes literally died back because that cold front in November or whatever just killed them off.
Yeah.
I was ready to pull one up. And 2 days ago, the leaves are coming out of the bottom, not below the
key,
you know, but they're coming up about 3 inches up. And so they're, it gives
if
them time, and they take a
if
while.
They're, yeah, if they're above the graft point, that's fine. But I always worry about things coming from the bottom. Okay. Real quickly, give me your question because I'm real short on time here.
Okay. Well, my tomatoes just are not doing really good. Just the coolish weather.
And what kind of plants are we talking?
Tomatoes. I'm sorry. It did come through. Tomatoes.
Yeah,
my tomatoes are not dark green. They're light greenish.
Fertilize them at least every couple of weeks. You can feed a little bit more often. Water thoroughly whenever they're dry, like an inch deep. I'm watering mine about every other day, but mine are taller than me and dark green. But be constantly. Try that new Medina liquid fish product, and that's really producing good results for me. And that's what I would do, Chris. But let's try and get Larry in here before the Howard Garrett break. Yeah. Hey, Larry.
Good morning, Bob. Thanks. Quick question. What can I do to protect my zucchini plants from that worm?
Well, the only thing that I have found that works 100% is to take a syringe and actually inject some BT into the stem. Now, zucchini has a relatively dense stem. Sometimes you have to inject two or three places, but I make my BT pretty strong. I'll put maybe a tablespoon of BT in a cup of water, and I just use, you know, a fairly large barrel syringe with a fairly big needle on it, like a penicillin needle. If you're not comfortable with syringes, go to the grocery store and get one of these things they use to inject turkey and poultry and things before you put it on the grill that you can stick your seasoning in. But you know, I, being the old biologist I am, I've given them shots in my life, but that's the only consistent thing. Now, some of the pheromone traps work if you put them outside the garden, and I've had everything from bay leaves to garlic to many other things suggested, and I've just not had consistency with it. But if you will inject maybe about 2 to 3 inches up the stem where it comes out of the ground, or I guess on zucchini, maybe you can go out as much as
stem. On each
stem, not on the leaves, but on the stems.
Okay. All right, Bob. Hey, thanks a lot, man. I'm glad I got in.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
Yes, but if you've been listening very long, and most of you probably have, you know that this is the segment where we'll save the last 30 minutes of the show or so for more phone calls, but this is the time we get to talk to a very special gardener out there who's been helping folks all across the country, not just Texas, but probably all around the world. Good morning, Howard Garrett.
Good morning, and happy almost Mother's Day to everybody.
It's just less than 24 hours away, and as I tell people, whether you're a mother to your kids or your grandkids or your puppies out there, every lady out there should celebrate Mother's Day.
Well, hope everybody enjoys this great weather. It could not be any nicer. I don't remember a spring having this much cool weather.
You know, Roberta and I were talking about that, and I don't know whether we have short memories or whether we get this kind of weather, but I don't remember many Mays. It was in the 50s at my house this morning. I walked out with the dogs to leave, and I went in and grabbed a jacket.
And, I did, too.
Of course, I've got shorts on, and I've got a T-shirt underneath the jacket, but this is going to be a great day to be outside, and hopefully people will be out shopping for wonderful Mother's Day gifts and things like that. Oh, golly, there's three or four things I wanted to talk to you about, but one of them was, do you have a favorites list when people ask you what is a great Mother's Day gift? Do you have something special you always tell them about?
No, plants are always good, you know, bright flowering plants and things like that. Somebody just sent me an email, and this is a fairly common one, about having some fungus gnats problems inside, and I was just thinking about maintenance of plants. And one of the things that's so great, interior plants that just don't take any maintenance, like the Sansevieria and those kind of things, you know, and you can go so long in between waterings, which is the cause of the fungus gnats when you're not,
exactly.
not going
yeah.
long enough between waterings. So they would certainly be high on my list because they're just so foolproof and they clean the air and they just do, you know, just wonderful. And you can get them in all sizes and shapes and colors and variegations and everything else.
I tell people if you can't grow a Sansevieria, you're going to have to switch to plastic. It's
yep,
just
that's the next step.
Yeah, can't let them freeze. But other than that, they truly are outstanding. And it's amazing to me how many ladies really are seriously into gardening these days, whether it's houseplants, whether it's vegetables. And I think people staying at home now, I'm still not real sure about all this shelter-in-place stuff that's going on, but plants sure do add to it. They sure, like you brought up, they clean the air. We still keep, is Wolverton, was that his name? That worked for NASA. And he's got that list that tells you which plants actually take formaldehyde out of the air, which ones take benzene, and I kind of respect NASA as far as knowing how to promote air quality. Anybody into manned space flight's got to have a pretty good plan for keeping the air clean. And he points out that plants are better air purifiers than anything man can make.
Yeah, and we got the new Space Force going and already got a whole bunch of people signed up for it. Sounds pretty cool. You know, the interesting thing about that Wolverton list, the NASA list of the best plants for cleaning the air, it's also the easiest plants to grow.
You're right.
It really is interesting. So,
but yet, you know, there is an emotional component too. I remember a lot of years ago when I lived in Dallas, I put plants in Procter & Gamble's regional offices up there, and their manager wrote me the nicest letter about 3 or 4 months later, and said that absenteeism had gone down, that productivity had gone up, and we basically turned his office into a small jungle. But he said it's improved people's attitude, it's improved their productivity, and this day and time, you need something that brightens your day and helps your mental outlook as well as your dietary requirements. Plants just, we've got a little sign up that somebody sent, and it says, looks kind of like a Charlie Brown character, but he says, the answer is plants. Don't care what the question is. So, we like that, but are you guys seeing caterpillars? I tell you, in South Texas, this is the year of the caterpillar. There are about 10 different big old woolly bear types. They're smooth caterpillars. They're big. They're small. I don't think I've ever seen the diversity of caterpillars that we're looking at.
You know, I saw a pre-explosion of them. I started seeing forest tent caterpillars on the ground, not clustered in big masses on the sides of the trees yet, but on one here on the edge of a pot, and one on the grass, and one more over here, and I saw a little cankerworm hanging here and hanging there, and I thought the same thing that you're thinking, man, this is going to be bad. But all of a sudden, here, I'm not seeing any anymore. So I don't know if the bird, and Judy and I were talking about this a couple of days ago. We've got more birds than ever before, and we don't feed bird seed anymore because, you know, attracting the mice and rats and everything. We just do it with planting the plants that have seed and berries and things like that, and we really have more birds this year than I ever remember. It's really been fun.
Roberta was counting the number of little wrens and titmice that she's watched fledge, you know, coming out of the nest and learning to fly. And it was, you know, 15, 20 little ones so far just right around her house. And it's funny that even the seed-eating birds, you know, when they're at this stage, when they're raising little chicks, they eat a lot of insects because they need the proteins for the little ones to develop naturally. And they're the best bug eaters feeders in the world. Anybody that's ever had the pleasure of watching a pair of wrens feed a nest full of little ones or titmice or whatever, it's, I don't know how they hunt so efficiently, because either the male or the female are back every 3 or 4 minutes with a big old fat juicy caterpillar in their mouth. And they're one of the best insect controllers a person can have in the garden. And this time of year, especially.
What's going on here? Because I'm not seeing very many caterpillars at all in a huge number of birds. I'm seeing more brown thrush this year, which is a wonderful songbird. And like you say, a lot of wrens. And, of course, we've got the titmouse that's still driving Judy crazy with that monotonous song. And she also spent a whole lot of time watching these baby crows come out of the nest. And they're hanging around. And you can tell the difference. And they're a little bit smaller, and their call is a little bit weaker, you know.
Uh-huh.
They're hanging around. They kind of fly in and land over the top of the car when you come in, all kinds of stuff. So we apparently have some pet crows now for a while.
Well, they're entertaining, and they're one of the, I will say, cleverest birds I know of, and they can be problem causers. But I remember one time a lot of years ago staying at a place where they would actually, individual cabins where the proprietors would come and they'd leave your breakfast in a little basket outside with a cloth napkin spread over the top of it, and watching the crows fly down, pull the napkin off,
yep,
and grab a large roll. I don't know how they can fly with some of the things that they carry off, but it's crows are highly entertaining, but people that have pecans and things like that are not real crazy about them. But yeah, birds bring a lot of laughs around our places. And the hummingbirds, golly, we've got quite a crop of hummingbirds this year too.
By the way, I did find a grower that had this soiree periwinkle that you've been talking to me about, so I got every color they had, and tried to do some interesting arrangements with it. It looked like a good little plant.
I think you will enjoy that one. We got one that first year it came out, and Roberta put it in about, I guess, a 7-inch bowl, terracotta bowl maybe, and there was hardly a day all summer long that it didn't have dozens of flowers open on it. And that's still my favorite, the white one with a little pink center. They call it cool peppermint or something like that. But they've got a pretty pink. They've got a pretty light purple. They've got sort of a salmon-colored one now, and I like them all. I'm not as crazy about them in the ground, but in containers or like, yep, in a window box. That'd be a good thing to give Judy for Mother's Day. Yeah, you can tell her you got them for her. That'll be great.
Yep, so.
Very good. Have you come up with anything new or different with the squash vine borers? You probably heard I had that question just a little while ago. And, I still recommend the Satumi and the squashes that have the little narrow stem. But people that want to grow the big crooknecks and zucchinis, anything new on your palate as far as how to control the vine borers?
Well, that hair application is intriguing to me. I'm going to try that and recommend it to people. And hopefully some of your listeners, more of them and more of mine, will try it and see if there's really anything to that. It might, if silica does do something, and it might, natural diatomaceous earth applied as one of your rock minerals to the soil probably is worth the effort. But that's the only new thing. One of the things that Sam Cotner told Malcolm a long time ago was that if you planted more plants,
mm-hmm,
and instead of the number that you normally do, just a whole lot more plants, that for some strange reason the pressure from vine borer and the squash bugs is greatly diminished. Now, how that would work, I have no idea, but that's just another thing people can try.
Well, I've moved my gardening around a little bit. I'm growing more stuff closer to the house, as I think I told you, but golly, I've had rows where I had probably 40, 50 squash plants, you know, in one row, and I still would have the vine borer problems periodically. But the hair, I had forgotten we talked about that. That will certainly be worth trying, and
worth trying,
I know they're
sure.
there's going to be plenty of hair around. I know that when the gal that cuts my hair gets back up and running, I've grown enough hair in the past 3 months that I will have plenty for my garden. I think we're all looking like we did back in the 70s with the long hair these days with no place to get it legally cut. I've almost been tempted to tell Dr. Kirby to get his shears out, but I think I'll hold out for a few more days. But there'll be plenty of hair out there.
People around right now, that's for sure.
But
let's try that, and I think you apply beneficial nematodes to your vegetable garden, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I usually do it pre-planting, and I always hope that takes care of the larvae in the soil before it comes out and forms. It looks like a wasp, of course, but it's actually a moth. But and it's been so dry. Y'all have been blessed with more rain than we have, but I suspect that they get in the fields outside the garden as well as in the garden proper. And I can spray my garden. I can put the beneficial nematodes out in the garden without any problem. But I've just got a lot of arable land close by. And always seem to be one or two of them that find their way in. And sometimes I'm fast enough to get them before they start their egg laying. But seems like invariably I'll have at least a few of them around. But I'll give the hair a try this year. I'll tell Susie to save my it's a little bit different color than it used to be, but I don't think that'll affect the efficacy of it at all.
It's going to show up a little bit more. Trying a new Japanese maple. We've got a young fellow that has a place here that specializes in growing Japanese maples, but he's also got Shantung, and he's getting into ginkgos and various kinds of things. We're kind of sharing information. I'm trying to get him to start handling the Parodia, the Persian ironwood, and some of the other more unusual kind of things. But I asked him what his favorite of the reds, the Japanese maples that stay red. Judy was commenting that all ours, and in the past, I've kind of concentrated on the green ones, and because I like the spring color that they have, and also the fall color so vivid. But having some that stay red through the summer is a neat thing to do too. And I had a new place for it because I took down a big fig and a big viburnum, and he recommended one called Fire Glow. Have you tried it yet?
I am not familiar with Fire Glow, but I'm making a note as we talk.
Yeah, he said that it would stay red as well or better than the blood good and some of the others that are more common. So we're going to try those. They're really pretty little trees. So we'll see.
Recommending them is understory or out where they get a good deal of sun?
Oh, kind of. Mine's going to get some direct sun in the middle of the day and then kind of dappled light in the morning and afternoon, and he thought that would work fine. He said probably the ideal situation is real high shade and dappled sunlight, you know, all through the day.
I think that's true of most of them. Now, the big tooth and even Shantung and some of those, we've grown those out in full sun very successfully. But all the
green ones too. The species plants can take a whole lot more full sun. I've got one in front of the house, and we took down a big bur oak and planted a smaller tree that doesn't have such large acorns bombarding the roof of the house. And it put one of the green maples, the species maples, in full sun for several hours during the middle of the day, and it handles it fine. I think the species plants can probably grow out in full sun, but they probably like it better to have a little bit of protection, especially from the afternoon sun.
Well, and of course, we always want to keep that root flare exposed, but I think a good mulch out over a lot of the root zone. I think that's one of the things. I think sometimes the sun isn't as hard on the top of the tree as we like to think, but when you've got it just beating down on the ground, when you've got your soil temperatures really getting up in the summertime, I think that's hard on some of the maples, and I'd into mulching them pretty well. I wish we had a wider palette, of the ones that will take the sun, but and I love the red too. I definitely will be looking for Fire Glow. That sounds like a pretty tree.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll check that out and keep looking at more. I'm enjoying all the new ones that I've gotten, and we're adding them to the, in fact, they have been added to our Japanese maple page in dirtdoctor.com, so people can go there and see all the new ones that I've added short of these two latest ones. But we'll get them added here as soon as we can also.
And do encourage your friend to grow more of the ginkgos. I like ginkgo as a tree for its color, but it's also pretty. It's also unusual, and we still about the only place we can get ginkgos is out of California, and they're expensive and they're hard to get. And if you have the right place, I think they take relatively deep soil to really flourish, but. You look at how well yours have done, and I know several people in the area down here that have done just extremely well with them as a landscape tree, and I sure wish we had a more reliable source on them at a reasonable price.
Well, if it doesn't take up too much room for you, you can get some going in your greenhouse and start growing them from seed. And I think from y'all's standpoint, you could sell them as an understory and a container plant. They'll grow in full shade all day long.
Oh, yeah.
And growing them, starting off with little small ones, and that might be a good way for y'all to get into, if you could find some seedlings somewhere and get them started in containers. I think they'd fit into Shades of Green's motif there very, very well.
I think you're right. You said yours didn't produce as much seed this year.
I produced a huge amount, more than ever
before. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it was because of the tremendous amount of moisture that we had or not, but no, I spent summer shop vacuuming the fruit up, and we've still got tons and tons of it. I thought I sent you some. Did I not send you some of this last batch?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I would love to get some of that. That's but no, I don't believe we've gotten any yet. And I've still got to get out and get some of this trauma comfrey to send your way, because that looks like something that's going to have a lot of use for those of us that tend to get stung and cut and bumped on things every now and then. But we've been busy. I mean, it's been gratifying, but just the number of people that are new to gardening. Some of them want to get into vegetable gardening. Some of them are really looking to improve their landscapes. And I guess it's maybe because people are more working at home, but we've never been busier. I mean, May has just, we're just keeping our heads above water and going home tired every night, but it's been very gratifying and a lot of fun, and it's also a lot of fun how many people are recognizing the importance of staying organic. So it's going to be a good spring. It's going to turn out well, and we're going to have to see how things go with this opening back up. A fellow who's become a pretty good friend is our mayor of Bernie, and among other things, he's head of Santikos in this area, and just a very well-spoken, thoughtful, articulate man, and he actually put out a video, and I think it's on the Santikos website, explaining how they were opening and why they were opening, and he said that it had just gone viral. It had gotten like 30-some-odd calls from different news outlets around the country, and we were getting together the other day. I was taking him actually some vegetables out of the garden, and he was about 30 minutes later than he thought he would be, because he had an interview with somebody from one of the BBC outlets and said that she basically wanted to be very argumentative, saying, "Don't you think it's too early to open them?" He said, "No, I don't think it's too early, or I wouldn't be doing it, and here's what we're doing to keep everybody safe." So it's an interesting process. I'm very thankful that none of us have been impacted by having serious issues with the disease, but we sure are glad we're seeing more people open up. And of course, you guys up in Dallas have made the news, not always in a positive way, but I think y'all are moving forward with opening up pretty well too now.
Yeah, all the nurseries down San Antonio State opening, and both they've been jam-packed around here too, so I think the gardening and landscape world is doing well, and now it's starting to happen in other ways with the barbershops and things like that, so we'll see how it goes. I'm glad it's happening. We'll see if any bad things come of it.
Well, it'll just, we've got to some extent build up that herd immunity, but are you still offering the 2-for-1 on the organic certification course?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, Doug told me that we sold four of the classes yesterday. So somebody called and said, how can I learn more about this organic stuff? And he didn't even know about the class, and Doug told him about it. And he said, oh, that's just absolutely perfect, just what I needed. So we're going to continue that. If people don't know what it is, if you sign up for the class, buy one of the classes, you get to identify a friend or a relative or whoever you want to get up another one free. And you can kind of make a little side deal, I guess, so it'd just be 50-50 for both of you.
Well, we've got
that route, that's fine.
We've got two newer employees here at the nursery that are just chomping at the bit, but they're both saying, I'm just too tired. We've got to have business ease up just a little bit so I won't fall asleep, so I can concentrate more. And I tell them, well, Howard's pretty good at keeping you awake, but I know what you're talking about, going home tired in the evening. So we've been trying to spread the word, too, and we'll continue to do so. Glad you continue to do that, because it's just for people that want to get an intensive short course in the basics of organics and hopefully stimulate the desire to go out and study and do even more, it's just a really good thing you've done there. And I think there will come a time when we want an advanced course out there as well, but there's just only so many hours in the day, and I honestly don't know how you do as many things as you do, but there are just an awful lot of us that really appreciate everything you do, Howard.
Well, that's going pretty well. And the other thing that's going well is the vegetable gardening book that we did. And
yeah.
I kid about it in my column and on my show and everything, that it was the worst named book in the history of book writing and creating. Because, you know, we had named it the Texas Organic Vegetable Gardening Book.
Right.
Early on, and then I decided, we decided to add fruit to it, and then I decided to add some other edible landscaping plants to it. So it covers all kinds of food crops, and it covers, it helps people from coast to coast and border to border, because we cover the timing kind of things.
Right.
From the last and first frost dates. Now, you're still going to have to talk to local people like you, and that's one thing the Extension Services are great at, is helping with varieties sometimes and research there. But I recommend that even, you know, in one metropolitan area. It'll vary from one side to the other a lot of times.
Well, and in one neighborhood, and it's down here, it's amazing how just a little change in elevation, but we tell people getting into it, I always tell them there are two books you've got to have if you're going to take up vegetable gardening. One of them is that book, and the second one is the Texas Bug Book. That people love that because even though you probably only cover a fraction of the things you're going to see, you do cover the most important with really, really good photography in there. So Texas Bug Book is the second one after the Texas Organic Vegetable Book. Those are two that I think every new gardener has to have on the shelf, and then you can graduate on to the herb book and the big book and all those others, but those two are our basic recommendation for where to start.
Well, I appreciate it, and those are some tips for some Mother's Day presents, maybe. So
yeah, absolutely.
You guys enjoy the rest of the weekend, enjoy all the great business and the good weather, and everybody have a wonderful and safe Mother's Day, and we'll just do this next week. How's that for an idea?
That sounds like a great idea. I've got a black lab sitting here right next to me looking up, says that sounds like a fine idea, too. So you give Nellie and Tater a pet for us, Howard. Once again, wish Judy, wish Logan a very happy Mother's Day for us, and we'll look forward to next Saturday.
See you then.
Stephanie is up first. Good morning, Stephanie.
Hi, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. A few weeks ago, I bought some mint and some chocolate mint.
Okay.
I planted them, and they're going crazy, which is good.
Yes.
Something is eating the leaves.
Is it taking big chunks out of the leaves or eating little holes in the leaves?
Little holes.
You probably have an issue with pill bugs, sow bugs, roly-polies, whatever you want to call them. They have a taste for mint. Easily taken care of. You can either create your own little trap by burying a glass jar down in the ground and putting just a little water, a little sliced apple in the bottom. They fall in and can't get out. Or if you want to put out a good, safe bait, There's a product on the market called Sluggo, S-L-U-G-G-O, Sluggo Plus. It's iron phosphate plus spinosad, safe for people and pets, but does a good job against snail slugs and pill bugs. And you can just scatter a little bit of that around your mint. You can still harvest and enjoy the mint, but that's probably the best and easiest way to take care of the pill bug chewing.
Okay, it's not in the ground, so should I still put it? I have it in a pot to control it.
Just put a pinch of it, you know, down in the soil in the pot. It's amazing those. You know, I know people that have pill bugs on their third story balcony that have somehow managed to climb all the way up, and it's still safe and it's still fine in pots.
Okay, another question about with the mint. Does it take full sun, or can I bring it inside and put it in the window?
It doesn't have to have full sun. It will take full sun. Inside, the problem is more humidity. It's the light's not the issue, but our heaters in the winter, our air conditioners in the summer, pull that humidity down in the single digits, and mint simply likes a little bit more moist environment. It's always going to be happier on the porch or balcony or patio or wherever, and it will have a better flavor outside. Now, you can grow it inside in a sunny window, but if you're enjoying it in mojitos and tea and things like that, it's going to be more flavorful and better outside. Another way you can grow it is it doesn't have to be in a pot. You can put it in a hanging basket. And I've seen hanging baskets with runners 3 feet long coming down, and it's a great way to grow the mint if you don't have room, you know, in a ground level pot for it. And also, hanging baskets tend to be freer of insect problems.
I never thought of that. That's a great idea.
That's why you get to talk to me every now and then.
Well, I'm still wet behind the ears on gardening. I love the mint and in my tea, and that's enough. I don't have to have sugar or anything. I just love it.
I totally agree with you. And there are so many different kinds. Regular spearmint is always good. Black stem peppermint, it's beautiful as a ground cover in the yard. I know a lot of people plant it between stepping stones and things. And you can go to Corsican mint. You can go to orange mint, which is very strong and quite a vigorous grower. There, you can easily find 10 different types of mint to grow, and I think you'll enjoy all of them.
Okay, and that product was Sluggo?
Sluggo Plus.
Sluggo Plus, great.
Yeah. And you call me anytime I can help.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, Stephanie. You have a wonderful Mother's Day. Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right, next up is Butch. Good morning, Butch.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
You kind of faded Hello? Out there. Yes, sir. That's I hear you
morning.
Fine now.
How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Doing off to a, well, radio show's almost over. I don't know how it goes by so quickly, but it's going to be a beautiful weekend out there.
Yes,
temperature
is
just unbelievable. Yes, sir.
A couple of things to help our yard out. The nematodes, do you put those out like in a watering can, or would you spray them through a hand pump sprayer?
It depends on how much area you have to cover. If it's a small area, I think your watering can is the best way to go. If you're doing several thousand square feet of grass, I go with the sprayer on the end of the hose. But it just depends on how big an area you need to cover.
Okay, but a pressure tank sprayer, would that damage the nematodes as they come out with the water hose?
You know, I worry more about the pressure being built up, because if you're like me, when I'm using that pump-up sprayer, I'm pumping it up so I don't have to stop and pump real often, and that can actually create enough pressure to cause some problems. So I think the hose-in sprayer is better. You want to pull off that little filter over the top of the siphon tube, but pump-up sprayer would probably be my last option. I'm going to use watering can or a hose-in sprayer most of the time.
Got it. The second one is that we have some areas where the damage is fairly evident from the grubs and stuff like that. Is the palmetto the best for the shaded type area, heavier shade area?
Del Mar and Palmetto are both real good for shady areas. Now, if the areas, the damaged areas aren't too big, St. Augustine will grow in very quickly from the surrounding areas. It loves fertilizer. I put a little compost over areas where it's not too widespread, but if you need to get additional grass, first place I'd go is go dig up some of it out of your better St. Augustine. And if it last resort, if you need to go buy it, Palmetto and Del Mar are the two best varieties for shade.
Then is there any place around that? I know last year we were looking for some, and it was really hard to find. Is there any places you know?
Start with Thomas Stone and Landscape. I don't know, so many places just they want to sell several squares of it at a time, but my first call would be to Thomas Stone and Landscape. You might also check with Dell's Grass Farm because they grow their own grass. They're a little more reasonable sometimes than the minimum quantities they can sell for you.
All right, Thomas and Dell, we appreciate you. Have a great weekend, and pray that the economy gets back to going here pretty quick.
Well, every day we get one day closer, and I just want to get away from the negativity. My thing to tell people is stay positive. Spread some happiness. Be looking at the bright side, because I'm with you. Things are going to get better, and the way we look at it is the best way we can speed it up. And I appreciate you, Butch. You get out and have a great weekend, and we'll talk again. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Thank you very much.